Welcome to What a Creep, the show with Margot Donahue and Sonia Mansfield talking about creeps from the past to the present.
This is your quick guide to the biggest creeps, jerks, assholes, and losers, the best of the worst.
From two nice ladies who want the world to be a little less creepy.
Welcome back to What a Creep. This is Margot Donahue, and my cohort in creepitude, as always, is the amazing Sonia Mansfield. Hey, Sonia.
Hello, my friend.
Hello, my friend. We are the show that talks about creeps from the past to the present. We end each show, if you're new to us, we end each episode with someone who is not a creep, so you don't leave feeling that the whole world is terrible and a big garbage pile on fire. This week's creep is the basic bitch of creeps. He's just an asshole. It's nothing too terrible. Nothing that's going to give you nightmares or make you depressed for days. Trust me.
Phew!
Yes. You could find us on Facebook. We do have a basic Facebook page, but that's the place where people go to complain about our language. Warning, we use salty language on this program.
Fuck yeah.
We also have a private, once again, private Facebook group. You have to answer three questions in order to get in. If you listen to a few episodes, you should be able to do that. We just keep it a safe space to hang out. There's not a lot of arguing that happens there. It's just a place where we talk about creeps and non-creeps, and people have suggestions for the show, things happening in the news, that sort of thing.
It's the best group on Facebook.
It totally is the best group on Facebook. We are also on Twitter. We are at CreepPod because somebody had What a Creep for 10 years and never used it.
Creep.
We're also on Instagram at What a Creep Podcast, and we want to say hi to Kiri at All Killa No Filla for giving us a shout out there. That always makes me just like extra happy when I see that.
Yes, I love it.
And we have a basic email, old-timey email, whatacreeppodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to send us comments, suggestions, ideas for creeps and non-creeps. Or if you would like some stickers, just send us your address via the email, and I will drop them in the mail for you. I have another batch going out this weekend, so please let us know when you do get them. Also, Sonia, do you want to tell them about the website?
Yes, you can go to whatacreeppodcast.com, and it's everything you ever wanted to know about our podcast, but we're afraid to ask. We have links to almost all of our episodes, except for the ones that are behind the Patreon wall. We'll talk about that in a minute. And there is a link to our merch shop, where you can get t-shirts and masks, which sadly are a thing we still need. You can get tote bags, whatever you need. You could put our face on it. Put our face on it!
I'll buy that for $1.
Dollar?
That's our RoboCop. We're talking about dorking out. We'll talk about that at the end of the show.
Yes.
We're constantly referring to things that's going to happen later. Just stick with us. As Sonia mentioned, we do have a Patreon page. We have the first three seasons of the show there. We also will send you a newsletter. I know we didn't send a newsletter for a couple of months because Sonia, you know, busted her elbows. It's like hard to type that shit.
Sorry about my broken bones, y'all.
Sonia's dog, Max, who did it.
Damn it, Max. So newsletters are coming. They will be coming at the first of every month. It is a thing I'm going to do. It is my New Year's resolution.
I want to thank Sarah, Gerald, and Anne for joining us on Patreon. Also, we wanted to ask you all, if you do buy our merch, if you could send us pictures of you with your merch, we'll be able to include that in the newsletter. That would be pretty nifty. Also, I want to thank people who've been leaving us really great reviews on iTunes, the aforementioned Gerald, Willie, and Mulane. Thank you all so much for leaving us five-star reviews. It really helps us counterbalance the one- and two-star assholes that just want to rain on our parade. But they'll never get to us. Mm.
They're the worst.
They are the worst. All right, Sonia. You know who's not the worst?
Us. Who? No, we're the best.
Here we go. We're going to talk about our first episode. We're going to talk about today's creep. Sonia. What do you know about Norman Mailer?
That his name is Norman Mailer.
Well, he is our creep today. He's been in the news quite a bit lately due to the fact that his son, John Buffalo Mailer, is partnering with Mailer biographer John Michael Lennon on a new trove of Mailer writings. And this is from it's the late writer's ideas on what would happen in American democracy, what it would look like in the future. He died in 2007 at the age of 84, and he lived a life as big as any. And we will get into all that today. Yet, Mailer's longtime publisher, Random House, said they will not be associated with this work. And so things were going around in the publishing community. Was he canceled? Because
canceled.
He was canceled. Because Sky...
That's a thing.
Not really. Let's be clear, you guys. Louis C.K. was just nominated multiple awards.
For Grammys. Yes.
I mean, come on. Okay.
Yes.
But Skyhorse Publishing, which worked with Woody Allen last year to publish his biography, is working on this next work. Now, why is he considered cancelable so long after his death? Could it be because he was living his life out loud with his machismo and his boorishness? He'd been doing that for decades. What is so controversial about him? We will talk about Norman Mailer, why he is so controversial, why he is one of the creepiest of the writers and creators of the 20th century, and the trigger warnings are domestic violence and misogyny, and just a sprinkle of homophobia in there.
Ooh.
You're soaking in it. Okay. My sources are Norman Mailer's Wikipedia, of course, the documentary Norman Mailer, The American. I have a clip from the Dick Cavett Show 1971 where Norman Mailer brags about being a wife stabber to Gore Vidal and Janet Flanner. There's also the documentary recommended, by the way, by the people in our Facebook group, Town Bloody Hall. Also, the New York Times, Britannica, the New York Times Obituary, New York Magazine, and a cool little blog that I found called The Airship. Norman Kingsley Mailer was born January 31st, 1923 in Long Branch, New Jersey, the Jersey Shore. He was raised in Brooklyn, surrounded by loving women. His mother, Fanny, was a successful businesswoman. Her husband, Isaac, not as successful, but was a great dresser and liked women and was a bit of a drunk.
Oh, cool.
Both treated Norman like he was gifted and special. Norman also was always a highly sexual person and loved to openly joke about having sex with his mother while talking to her. He would tell her jokes like, "Mother dear, you were such a good lay the other night, weren't you?" And then she would choke, "Oh, please don't say that, Norman. You're such a scamp." He really did.
Really, really gross.
Yeah, Freud would have a field day with this. So they moved to Brooklyn. He's very, very smart. He is accepted into Harvard University at the age of 16. And he started writing when he was 18. He wrote his first short story and he took it to a publisher. It was published when he was 18, his very first story, and he won a national magazine contest with it.
Damn.
Yeah. He graduated in 1943 and married the first of his six wives. Her name was Beatrice, and even though they were married, he was soon drafted into the war. It was at the tail end, and he was sent to the Philippines, and that's so interesting to me because my dad's uncle was captured and was a prisoner of war in the Philippines at this time, and I wondered if he ever, for some reason, walked into Norman Mailer. He probably would have kicked the shit out of him. Anyway.
Probably, yeah. And Norman Mailer was writing a love letter to his own mother.
Dear Mom, I'm dreaming about you lately. Norman was in a few war skirmishes. In addition, he was also a typist, and he was eventually promoted to sergeant. And he wrote to his wife, not his mother. He did write to his mother, but he wrote a letter every single day to his wife describing what was going on. There was 400 letters. He basically turned that into his first novel, The Naked and the Dead, which is one of the first novels about World War II. You know, one by a soldier that was there. It was published in 1948. It was a huge bestseller. It became a movie, which wasn't very good. And he got really hooked on Hollywood for a while. But he realized it was a pretty tough nut to crack. So he came back to New York City. Eventually, he divorced Beatrice because he was having an affair with a woman named Adele Morales, and they got married in 1952 and had two girls. It was a very passionate relationship, and we will get into that. First, let me just get into some of his biggest accomplishments. In case everybody someday says, like, you never even mentioned what the great things he did. I'll tell you about that. In 1955, he helped create the Village Voice newspaper, which was a huge deal in the media world for decades. In his lifetime, he published over 30 books, fiction, nonfiction, essays, poetry, also screenplays. He won two Pulitzer Prizes, one for Armies of the Night in 1968 and one for The Executioner's Song in 1979.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He unsuccessfully ran for mayor of New York City twice. He was one of those famous writers. He would go on talk shows in the 1970s just to stir shit up with Gore Vidal and Dick Cavett. That was one of his things. He was really into boxing, so much so that he is one of the experts that's featured in the documentary When We Were Kings, which is about Muhammad Ali and George Foreman in the 1974 Rumble in the Jungle. It took place in Zaire. It's one of the best documentaries ever, but it's not streaming right now.
It is.
Good luck trying
what?
To get it. No, it's really frustrating because I wanted to talk about it for working out, but it's not.
That's bullshit.
He wrote and directed a few low budget films. None of them are very good. In 1987, he wrote and directed one of the worst films of all time called Tough Guys Don't Dance, and it stars Ryan O'Neal. Just go into YouTube, type in Ryan O'Neal, Tough Guys Don't Dance, and there's a scene where he just goes, oh, no. Oh, wow. Oh, God. What? Like, it's the worst, worst, worst.
Whoa. It's okay.
Laughably bad. And I've never seen the show Gilmore Girls, but apparently he was on there.
Oh, I did watch Gilmore Girls, but I don't remember.
He slept with dozens of women, and what is the one of the loudest critics of the women's rights movement in the 1970s. He also liked to call himself the enemy of birth control. He was against women using it.
Ew.
Right. He had 10 kids.
Yucky. How many of those kids are with his mother?
Well, he's had 6 wives, so...
Okay, got it.
He had regrets about some specific behaviors that he admitted towards the end of his life. That's what I'm going to be talking about today. Mainly, it was the treatment of women, both romantically and intellectually, and his opposition to homosexuality. In the 1950s, around the time of the first wave of the Village Voice, ruling the hipster class in New York City, Norman was with Adele. They were married. And they often had threesomes to satisfy his sexual appetite. He also liked to, you know, set up his wife into fights with the other women. He was very manipulative. He was drinking and using drugs to deal with his anxiety. After he had that first big hit in 1948, some of his other books didn't do as well. She said he would take pills and pace around his apartment for hours. He sounds like a real treat to be around.
It sounds like a lot of things just fell into his lap. And when they don't fall into his lap, he doesn't know how to deal with it.
Exactly.
Mm.
He would take pills, pace around the apartment, and he obsessed about things like his writing, sex, sexuality, jazz music, and the virility of black men.
And his mother.
And his mother. Mamma mia. His initial contribution to the civil rights movement, to him, was to admire black men for their jazz music of the era. And this is where he got his idea of how virile black men are in bed. His 1957 essay, The White Negro, was about how...
I don't even know what to say to that. Like, I'm just sitting here closing my eyes like, what? What?
It's a story about... how black men, it's an essay, it's an idea, it's a think piece, 9,000 words. He's tweaked out of his mind when he wrote it. He had to have been. That's me just saying that. But it's about how black men are so big and strong and have an unquenchable amount of energy just naturally that, of course, they will resort to stealing and violence to sustain themselves.
Oh, brother.
And he says that the white Negro is someone who can adapt some of that energy and enthusiasm, be so successful because the black man is held back in the society. If you just kind of steal some of their thunder, you'll be even more successful. This is at a time when there's urban flight is happening in big cities.
Yes.
And so Black people, BIPOC people are being blamed for scaring white people out of the cities. Norman Mailer said he envied them for their virility. And he became obsessed with boxing and also just with violence in general. Black writers such as James Baldwin tried to explain to him that these are dangerous stereotypes.
Yes.
But Norman didn't listen. He also got to picking fights with people when he was drunk. And his friends didn't want to hang around him as much.
Makes sense. Sounds like a drag.
Huh. So here we go, 1960. Norman and Adele had a party at their home to announce his intention for running of mayor for New York City. Because why not? He has the ego the size of New York City.
Right.
They shared an apartment with their two daughters, young daughters, on the Upper West Side. And on the evening of November 16th, they invited over 200 people from all kinds of backgrounds to come to this party. He literally started just dragging people from the streets, just inviting them in. The atmosphere was tense. He was talking about what he would do for the city, how he would, you know, make it better, why you should vote for him, like the blah, blah, blah. All of this, he is wearing a ruffled matador shirt. He was really into bullfighting, too. So, you know, like Seinfeld's puffy shirt?
Yes.
He's kind of wearing a puffy shirt.
I don't want to wear a puffy shirt. I don't want to wear the pirate shirt.
And you can picture this guy. He's got like red face because he's all drunk and hot and sweaty. And he's arguing with people. Ugh, these kind of parties are the worst. At one point, he separates the room into two sides, saying, these are the people that are with me, and these are the people that are against me. And at some point, he leaves the party to go outside to get in fight with people on the streets.
How fun!
Adele is trying to deal with this while they have two young daughters trying to sleep. He's making a fucking racket. When he returns at 4:30 in the morning, he and Adele have an argument. She may have taunted him about his mistress at the time coming to the party.
You'd think.
That kind of annoyed her.
Yeah, it would annoy me too.
He had a penknife. He used it usually to clean his nails, like obsessively. This time, though, what he did was he rushed at her with it. And
oh my
he
stabbed
God. Her twice. Once in the back, and then once in her breast.
Oh my God.
Missing her heart.
Jesus Christ.
The last of the people at the party found them, and he was standing over her, and she's bleeding on the floor. And he said, don't help her. Let the bitch die.
That is some terrible shit.
Yes. So a couple of friends drag her out of there. She's bleeding. They somehow get her into a cab and get her to the hospital. She goes to the hospital. And it's like a shit show because, the you know, there's the paparazzi taking pictures.
Yes.
He was a famous writer. Her father worked as a newspaper typesetter, and he would set the front page. That was his job.
Mm-hmm.
He was setting up the typesetting saying Norman Mailer stabbed his wife. That's how her father found out
his my
daughter
God.
Was stabbed. And he didn't know if she was okay.
That's scary.
She goes to the hospital, and Norman visits, and he sneaks in through the back door, and he says to her, he doesn't beg for forgiveness. He begs her not to press charges against him. He's trying to run for mayor. He's, you know, he needs to make money so that they can take care of their daughters. If he's in the jail, nobody can take care of them. He tells her to tell the cops that she slipped on some glass. He told her to lie. And then before he left, he said to her, you know, right now on the gurney, you've never looked more beautiful to me.
Oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
What an asshole.
He never apologized to her for this, by the way, in her lifetime. And he only expressed regret like a couple of years after she died. Also,
he's trash.
He was trash. And also, people visiting her in the hospital were publishers and his agents and people like that. They also went in there to tell her, he's really important. You can't have him go to jail. No one will be able to take care of you. You're going to be alone.
That is so sad.
It's
no one had
so
her back.
Messed up. Nobody had her back.
That sucks.
This is how the world was. The very next day, he was on TV bragging about Mike Wallace. He was on Mike Wallace's show. And he talked about how the knife was a symbol of manhood.
Fuck you.
So the cops arrest him because he's bragging now about it.
Yeah. Now he's Norman the Impaler.
Storm and Norman, the wife stabber. He is sent to Bellevue Hospital for 17 days for observation. He was most upset about being seen as not mentally fit. Adele divorces him and refuses to press charges because she doesn't want her daughters affected by the consequences. He admits later that his friends mostly stood by him and that there was no real social blowback.
Of course.
He was not canceled.
Nope.
He would go on later to brag about it. Like I said before, he bragged about it on Dick Cavett's show later. We put that clip in our Facebook group, but you can find it for yourselves. Their two daughters were told that the stabbing was an accident, but eventually they found out the truth.
Right.
In 1962, he published a book of poems called Deaths for the Ladies. And in it, he describes that using a knife on your partner, it shows that there's still some love left.
so fucked up. It's such bullshit.
All right, so that's...
I did it because I love you.
Yeah, exactly.
Did it because I love you. If I didn't feel this way about you, I wouldn't have stabbed you.
It's because I love you so much because you bring so much to me. You turn me on so much.
Yeah. Fucking asshole.
All right, so let's head into the 70s and where we have the second wave of feminism taking over the country. Guess how Norman's going to relate to it?
He loves it. Super into it.
So women's lib, that's kind of like how it's being talked about at the time. The descriptions of men being like male chauvinist pigs or women burning their bras, which is not actually a thing that really happened very much. People love to say that expression, but it didn't really happen.
I would love to burn some bras, actually. I'm into it.
On the evening of April 30th, 1971, Norman was invited to chair a panel about women's liberation. Because, of course... And
yes.
It was at New York's Town Hall, and it's because he had written a book called The Prisoner of Sex, which advocates women are basically inferior to men in strength and in sexuality, so therefore they can never be any kind of equality. He admits that women are paid less than men, and that's not fair, but otherwise he really doesn't have any empathy.
Right.
The documentary will eventually be called Town Bloody Hall. And will feature Norman chairing the discussion with feminists Jacqueline Sabellis, Germaine Greer, Jill Johnston, and Diana Trilling. And then there's people like Susan Sontag and Betty Friedan that are in the audience. 1971 is when this happened. 1979 is when the film comes out. It's very strange, but it takes a long time to come out. But it's fast. It's also on Criterion.
Oh, okay.
If you want to see it. It's alternatingly fascinating and infuriating to listen to. You know, at the start, Germaine Greer admits that the movement does not include civil rights or the peace movement.
Yes.
She admits that, you know, this is about white women in the suburbs, basically. And she calls now a bunch of squares and doesn't admit to white privilege. She's a piece of work. Jill Johnston reads a poem. Or it's an essay / poem. It's one of those slam kind of things.
Yeah.
And her whole thing is all women are lesbians. Also, which is very radical for 1971. Like,
yes.
By the way, Norman Mailer is like freaking the F out. Like, he's not just.
Of course he is.
He's homophobic about males, but he's also homophobic about women, even though he's got three. He has threesomes all the time with women.
Right.
So, I don't know. So. She reads this poem, and she also in this essay, and she also reads about how the Bible only focuses on men and their sons and not daughters and mothers. And at the end of this speech, she jokes that a man told me, I want your body. And I told him, you can have it when I'm through with it. Which is a great joke. Norman Mailer was so pissed off. If you see this thing, he is so fucking pissed because she's getting jokes and laughs.
Yes.
Left and right.
Yeah, you know he's a dude who's like, women aren't funny.
Right, exactly. And then she gets the biggest laugh, the most natural laugh.
Yeah.
And not even trying. She's just talking. There are arguments about whether or not women can have orgasms on their own or with each other. He's a grouchy moderator. He instills strict time constraints even when the audience objects. At one point, two women are invited on stage to make out with each other. This is like before Howard Stern. Like, he would just have given him a hard time. And he has a cow. He like freaks, like I said, he freaks the fuck out. When Susan Sontag asks a question from the audience as to why he refers to her as a woman critic and not just a literary critic. Mm-hmm. And it says, it's because men have been doing it for much longer. You're just going to have to get used to that.
Fuck off.
He also gets testy when he speaks about his thoughts on homosexuality. When a homosexual man in the audience says, you describe homosexual men as being basically women and therefore inferior. Borman tries to talk his way around it, but basically a lot of his friends think he was most likely bisexual, if not closeted homosexual, because he was so voracious with it. Like, he was so loud and whatever.
Yes. The people who yell the loudest.
He also, in this documentary, he defends beating women because inferior women force their men to do it.
Fuck this guy.
There is so much that's going on here. And on the one hand, like I said, it's infuriating. But on the other hand, it kind of makes me sad that these kind of debates don't really happen anymore. It's kind of fun to be in an audience where equally people can be, you know, pissed off and yelling at it. I don't know. I just thought there's something kind of quaint about it.
Yeah. We do it on Twitter now.
That's true. All right. So let's do one more. And this is from 1979. Norman Mailer wins the Pulitzer Prize for The Executioner's Song. And The Executioner's Song, it's a true story about the execution of Gary Gilmore. He was a man in the mid-70s who shot. He was a killer. Mm-hmm. He had just gotten out of jail for various things. He killed two men in Utah. Very young men, like, and it's really sad and terrible. Like, he fought to be executed right away. There hadn't been one in a few years. He demanded that the state do it right away. He didn't want to go through any kind of legal anything. And it made a lot of news at the time. Nowadays, that's no big deal at all. This happens a lot.
Right.
But back then, it was a big deal. And his brother, Michael Gilmore, wrote a book that I love called Shot in the Heart, which is much more about what the entire family had been through before Gary turned into Gary Gilmore.
Mm-hmm.
Norman Mailer doesn't really do that. I mean, it's a fine book, and it was made into a movie with, like, Tommy Lee Jones. I forget, Patricia Arquette. But after this movie comes out, a guy that's in prison, his name is Jack Abbott, and he writes to Gary Gilmore and says, I'm innocent of the crime I've been convicted of, and I've been reading your work, and let me just tell you about the conditions here at this prison that I'm at. And Norman Mailer just really takes behind this guy. He supports him and helps him publish a book called In the Belly of the Beast. It helps Abbott get released from prison. Once he's paroled, 6 weeks after his release, he stabs to death a 22-year-old man who's just working at a restaurant, just kill somebody and has to go right back to jail. And this is Norman Mailer for years saying this guy's innocent. He couldn't hurt anyone.
Oh my God.
Look how talented he is. How can somebody this talented and can write so well kill somebody? For coming from a guy who stabbed his wife.
Yes. What? And the parole board's like, sure. Yeah, that dude stabbed his wife, and he says the talented people don't do these things, so let's just let him go.
Yeah. You know, and New York Press, they don't like this shit. Like, the New York Post and Daily News, like, they really gave him a hard time. Very defensive about it for years. It wasn't until many years later that he admitted, yeah, that wasn't anything to take a pride in. I shouldn't have done that. That's not any. So Norman lives to be 84, and in the year 2007, a few months before he's going to pass away, spoiler, he is giving...
Spoilers.
He's giving a talk, and he looks like a brief shell of who he was. You know, he's so thin and tiny. He can't hear well. And he's very Norman Mailer. He's like, look, I can't hear. You're going to have to look at me when you talk to me. and I'll talk as loud as I can, but that's as loud as I get. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, what's this going to be about? And then he said to him, what was that whole thing about what happened with the women's rights movement and that, you know, town Bloody Hall? And he said, I don't know what to tell you. When I was growing up, I grew up around a lot of strong, smart women, mouthy women. And I thought it was totally my place to go in there and just be, you know, an agitator and be somebody. And he said, what a fool I was. I should never have done that. He kind of is thinking about himself in a more three-dimensional way and like the consequences of it. So maybe he thought more. I mean, he thought about Adele. He did think about the things in his life that he had done incorrectly. So I think he lived long enough that he saw the folly in it.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
I hope so.
His kids loved him, by the way. He was a very loving father. He was very much into their lives. He was active. He was funny. They're all, you know, pretty successful in what they do. So mm-hmm. he's not, you know, he wasn't a total monster or anything.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing we talk about on the show sometimes. Not everybody is all bad, all one thing. They could still be a creep and have done good things.
Yeah. And there's that path to redemption. And maybe that was his way of doing it. So that's my creep this week, our creep this week, Norman Mailer.
Good job, Margot.
Thank you.
I didn't know so much of that. This was very educational. Good job.
Thank you.
Do you want to hear about someone who's not a creep?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Let me make sure I'm opening up the right file. Have you read any Toni Morrison?
Of course I have.
I haven't because I'm the worst, but she is really dope. So she's one of the most celebrated authors in the world. Probably everybody already knows all these things, but I'm going to go out and say it anyway. She's written plays, children's books. Her novels have won countless awards. The Pulitzer Prize. She won the Presidential Medal of Freedom back when it still meant something, you know, before Rush Limbaugh got it from Trump. She was the former disgraced President Trump. She was the first African-American woman to win the Nobel Prize in literature. Yes, I didn't know that. Born February 18th, 1931 in Lorain, Ohio. She was the second of four children. Her birth name was actually Chloe Anthony Wolford. At some point, she got married and went by Morrison. She went by Toni, was her nickname. Her middle name was Anthony,
which is
super interesting to me. Yeah, so there you go. She grew up in a semi-integrated area, but racial discrimination was very much a thing there. When she was 2 years old, the owner of her family's apartment building set their home on fire.
Holy shit.
Because they were unable to afford the rent. Isn't that crazy?
Jesus Christ.
Crazy. Yeah. She was really into books. She was an avid reader. She attended Howard University. She got a bachelor's degree in English there. She went to Cornell University and got a master's in English. She graduated from there in 1955, and then she was teaching English at the Texas Southern University and then went back to Howard University as a professor. She's super
smart.
Fucking smart. She was teaching at Howard University for 7 years, and then she moved to New York, where she became an editor in the textbook division of Random House Publishing. And she transferred again to like the New York City branch, and with the idea of she wanted to edit fiction and books by African American authors. She was wanted to help create a canon of Black work. So she was doing this. By this point, she's divorced now. So she's raising two sons on her own, writing on her own free time. So she's working full time, raising two kids, and writing in her free time. And she was also instrumental in getting the autobiographies published of Muhammad Ali and political activist Angela Davis.
Nice.
Yeah. So her first novel is called The Bluest Eyes. And she wrote it, and these are like her like stolen moments between her day job as the book editor and raising those boys. And I don't know how you do it. I don't know how someone does that. And at this point, she's 39 years old. Wow. She was 39 when her first book was published. 3 years later, she wrote another book called Sula.
Yep.
And you were telling me that book is amazing. So yeah. I will be putting that one on my list, my notoriously long book list. And it won the National Book Award. And her third novel is 1977, Song of Solomon. And that received the National Book Critics Circle Award. Then in 87, she wrote Beloved. And I think everyone knows that one. Mm-hmm. It's a bestseller. It was huge. Like, it was like Oprah's book club, 25 weeks on the bestsellers list, won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction. And then in 93, she became the first Black woman to win the Nobel Peace Prize. Like I said, one of the things I read about her a lot was that she placed African-Americans, particularly women, at the heart of her writing. Mm-hmm. Always. When those stories were not being told, or those characters were supporting characters, not main characters. And she was doing that in a time when that just wasn't a thing. After she won the the Nobel Peace Prize, she was chosen by the National Endowment for the Humanities to give the Jefferson Lecture. She was honored as the National Book Foundation's Medal of Distinguished Contribution to American Letters. That just rolls off the tongue. Just rolls off the tongue. You know, she's received like multiple like honorary degrees. She was a guest curator at the Louvre. What the fuck?
Wow.
At the Louvre in Paris. That's a huge thing. I was like, what the fuck? So she did that. She was named a living legend by the Library of Congress. She wrote children's books. She wrote one with her son. And her son died when he was 45 years old. Oh, isn't that sad?
Yeah.
And then she published a book that they were working on together like 2 years after he died. And then, like I said, at one point she got the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and that was from Barack Obama. She died just a couple years ago. August 5th. What year? I didn't write the year. I am so sorry, but it was like 2 or 3 years ago. I'm real sorry. I think it was 2019.
Alexa, when did Toni Morrison die?
Yeah. Yes. There you go. She died August 5th, 2019. She was in the hospital in the Bronx. She was 88, and it was complications from pneumonia. But she, by all accounts, like an amazing woman. You could see her on television all the time. Just a really good person and a really, really talented person. I am going to add some of these books to my list.
Yeah, Beloved's one of my favorites. The movie is Oprah Winfrey. It's she's one of the producers, and Jonathan Demme is the director.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's upsetting. I mean, it's a sad story, and it's also mystical. There's mystical elements to it. It's really interesting. That's a good pick. Good job, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you. I will definitely, I'm going to watch the movie. Maybe I'll read the book first and then I'll watch the movie. I am legit going to read it. I put it on my app.
Well, that's our show today. And if you like the sound of our voices and if you made it this far, you do. We co-host a show called Dorking Out, where we'd like to dork out about movies. Right now, we have the movie
RoboCop is out.
Thank you. RoboCop is out. And then we are doing Singles.
We have been getting so many requests for this, so it's going to be super fun. This movie was, the soundtrack was inescapable when we were younger, and I'm looking forward to this one. It's going to be really great. We have a whole lineup for Dorking Out, all pre-planned. We're ready.
So thank you once again for listening to the show. Please follow us on social media with your ideas for creeps and non-creeps, because sometimes that's where we really struggle, is finding somebody just equally amazing as that person is equally shitty. It's that balance that we try to achieve. We love it when you use the Annie Potts GIF. We got one from Ghostbusters. Or use anything you want. You could be clever. You know what to do. And Sonia, where can they find you?
You can find me at thesoniashow.com and The Sonia Show on Twitter and Instagram and the TikTok, where I'm there to ruin it for the kids. Where can people find you, Margo?
You can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fitchick, mostly for Twitter and Instagram. My site is brooklynfitchick.com and my TikTok is at Margo Donahue. And we will be back next week with a new creep. So in the meantime, stay warm, stay safe, and don't be a creep.
Be a creep.
Thank you for listening to us talk about creeps. You can follow us at What a Creep Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
But don't follow us too closely.
You can email us your creepy stories at whatacreeppodcast@gmail.com.
But please keep your dick pics to yourself.